right, Christopher Cross, thank you for that. It is Tuesday at 9:40. This is when Karen Lyle from SalesportsTalk.com comes in to co-host this segment. On behalf of SalesportsTalk.com, Karen, how are we doing?
Oh, we are doing fantastic. Thinking about the deep sea today.
Well, let's go to our guest. We're happy to have her. It's Mickey Rogers. She's representing Deep Sea Conservation Festival, which was recently held in Seattle. Mickey, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit more about deep sea conservation, please.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for having me. So basically, right now, there are a couple of organizations thinking about mining our deep sea. And our deep sea is what I like to call our greatest climate champion. It's regulating our planet, regulating our climate. And it's just something that we don't really need to be tapping into. We don't need to be mining the deep sea. And so a group of youth ocean advocates in Seattle came together and planned a deep sea conservation festival at the University of Washington that attracted over 500 attendees. And we educated folks that were 2 years old up to later in life. And it was just a really fun event.
Well, Dr. Rogers, may I call you Mickey?
Yep, that's great.
Okay, certainly. I want to congratulate you on your accomplishments as a chemist at Pacific Northwest National Laboratory and also the co-founder of the Sustainable Ocean Alliance Pacific Northwest. Can you tell our listeners, because we have about 100 million of them in 168 countries, so it's a broad audience, about the deep sea and what is so precious about it and what we know?
Yeah, so my background is I am an atmospheric chemist and I study the relationship between the ocean and our atmosphere. And one of the most powerful things about our ocean is that it is our greatest carbon sink. And what that means is it can pull CO2, carbon dioxide, from our atmosphere. And that carbon dioxide can be converted into different kinds of carbon. And eventually that carbon sinks and settles into the bottom of the ocean, where it stays for thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. And this is what helps to regulate the amount of carbon dioxide that's in our atmosphere. And so we want to protect the deep sea because it's going to protect this really essential carbon sink that's helping to regulate our entire planet.
Can you answer this? Is it true that there's like a island the size of Texas of plastic bottles floating in the Pacific or something like that?
Yes, that is true. I can't remember exactly what it's called. I think it's the Great Garbage Patch. But yeah, that's a scary reality for our ocean right now.
Well, I've been fascinated by the amazingly interesting bioluminescent creatures, and I guess I call them creatures because some of they're different types of marine life. Can you tell us a little bit about what you learned about that? Because I know your specialty is in studying the airborne algae and its impact on human health and climate, but you were also part of this festival, and I got a chance to look at some of the videos, and it seems just amazing what kind of life we find down there.
Yeah, so bioluminescence is basically the production of an emission of light by certain creatures, certain organisms. A lot of these algae can produce bioluminescence, and we don't fully understand why they're doing it necessarily. It could be some sort of protection, some sort of response if there's any predation going on. But these creatures down in the bottom of the deep sea, they can illuminate in these deep waters where light is not able to penetrate at all. And at our Deep Sea Conservation Festival, we actually had a whole room designated to bioluminescence and having kids turn on these really cool lamps to kind of show what a creature would look like down in the deep sea versus what it would look like on land. So it might be transparent on land and you can't see it at all. But down in the deep sea, these creatures can light up and be really vibrant blues and be seen down in the dark waters.
It's so important that we have scientists like you doing all this type of research. And one of the things I saw that never even occurred to me is the fact that you are studying something called biological aerosol, which is specifically the airborne algae entire cells maybe becoming aerosolized in our atmosphere. Well, what have you found so far with all that, Mickey?
Yeah, so I like to kind of have people think about the ocean as our largest can of spray paint. It's just constantly emitting aerosols from these ocean waves up into the air. And so whenever you walk by the ocean, you might smell salt. And so that's salt getting up in the air. But a lot of other things can get in the air too, just like microbes and bacteria in the water. And what I study is are these airborne algae, these algae that are sitting at the surface and then get sprayed into the air. And what the research is showing is that these airborne algae are a lot more abundant in the air than we thought. And these cells can actually help to seed clouds in our atmosphere, and they can kind of seed or nucleate ice in our atmosphere too. So these airborne biological particles are helping to regulate our climate.
That is really cool. something that I, you know, when I was sailing down from San Francisco to Puerto Vallarta, just passing through the Channel Islands, we were on a catamaran, and on, you know, it has two hulls, and on the inner side, there was, as we went through the waves, there was all this bioluminescent, I guess it might have, would that have been algae that was kind of glowing on the water and at night, and also on the sides of the boat?
Yeah, so there's different kind of algae that are bioluminescent. I can't remember the name of the ones that are particularly bioluminescent, but yeah, exactly. So it's just these kind of like plant-like cells that are in the water, and you just, it's almost like you spook them and they light up. And as I said, we don't know exactly why they're doing it. We don't know if it's to help them with like migration or to just a response to stress, or if it's just one of those nature's beauty. But yeah, that's coming from algae.
Also, I think about how many creatures we haven't discovered yet because they're just down there and we can't get to them. How often do we find new species down there?
Yeah, I think almost every time we do a deep sea exploration, hundreds of new species are being found. And that's why it's so important for us to not go down and tamper with this, what's considered one of the last pristine environments on the planet. We need to go down there and keep doing research and learning about the different species down there, because some of these species can be really valuable to us. We can collect one species, bring it back to the lab, and there could be a particular compound or chemical in it that could be used to make new vaccines. And then we can synthesize that compound in the lab after that. So yeah, there's just hundreds, thousands of unknown species still down there to be explored.
Well, why did you pick Seattle for the location of this? Was this because the founders were from that area, or just because out of the partnership of the University of Washington?
So this event actually was inspired by a 17-year-old Girl Scout. She saw a talk from a very famous deep-sea scientist named Diva Amon a couple years ago, and that inspired her. So I think she was almost maybe 15 at the time. And over the last 2 years, she's had this idea of doing something to help protect the deep sea. And I volunteer with an organization called Sustainable Ocean Alliance. And we got connected through this organization, and I helped to mentor Ellen, who is the Girl Scout that had this idea to plan this deep sea conservation festival. And all of this was in part of her Girl Scout Gold Award. And so over the last year and a half, we've just been meeting almost weekly to plan and organize this event. And we brought in other youth leaders to make this amazing event that attracted over 500 people. And we were able to share with the Seattle community. And she just happened to be based in Seattle, so it made sense to keep this close to her since this was her idea.
How is it with, you know, foreign scientists? I would imagine that you would all work together, but as we know, the ocean touches so many different continents and countries, and yet we have, you know, fishing waters and, you know, economic zones. And do you sometimes get into the nitty-gritty of different nations telling you, look, don't come over here, we'll take care of it?
That is definitely something that's becoming more and more discussed. So there's an organization called the International Seabed Authority based in Nauru, and they're kind of the ones that are managing the ocean and especially the deep sea, and allowing groups or not to kind of go down and do work in the deep sea. And so one of the things that they are regulating is the permits for organizations or companies to go down and mine the deep sea. And I believe so far that they haven't actually allowed any permits to be mining the deep sea yet, but there's this kind of governing agency that's helping to facilitate all these different countries coming together to talk about deep sea protections or mining.
And Karen, we have time for one more question.
What is your favorite thing about the ocean?
Yeah, I like to think of the ocean as the lungs of the planet. So these algae that are in the water are oxygen producing. And now we've recently discovered these rocks that are at the bottom of the ocean that people are trying to mine. They actually produce oxygen too, which is just totally new because they're not even living. It's a new kind of oxygen production. And this oxygen helps us breathe. It contributes up to 50% of the oxygen on the planet. And so I like to think of the ocean as our living lungs.
Well, I want to remind everyone that this show is brought to you by Grays Harbor Historical Seaport, the Port of Seattle, and the State of Washington. Fly into the Seattle International Airport on your next trip and visit the Port of Seattle and her historic seaports. We have been speaking with our guests, Mickey Rogers, and she is with Deep Sea Conservation, with the festival they just had there in that same neck of the woods. Mickey, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Mickey.
Karen, you ever done any subsurface submarine exploration?
I have not, but I have definitely had guests on my boat who have been on submarines and, had quite some awesome adventures that way.
I was a guest one time on the USS Ohio, which is a Trident submarine in Bangor in the near Bremerton in the Puget Sound, and 200 yards long with 48 Trident missiles. It was a pretty but the thing is my dad said, who was a Navy officer, why would you join the Navy to go in the sub and then you don't see anything?
Well, I imagine that sometimes the other senses are important too, like what you hear and what you experience. I don't know what it's like to be in a sub that far down in the ocean, but I've certainly watched it on movies. That's mm-hmm. about my closest experience.
Right,
to it.
For 6 months. But that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing that keeps the detente, though, is because they know where all our missile bases are. But you have one sub under a polar ice pack. 48 Trident missiles can destroy your entire country. And on that happy note, we say goodbye to Karen Lyle, and go to SailsportTalk.com for more about what Mickey was talking about as well. Karen, good stuff. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Rick. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. And I'm chilled to the fact that that trash island is actually real out there. Come on back.